Let us go to the Dude Maker hotline. Say hello to Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute at Lepanto Institute. That's L-E-P-A-N-T-O, LepantoInstitute.org. Sign up for Michael's newsletter and be apprised of the latest investigative reporting that Lepanto Institute is doing on matters of life and of scandals that are being going on inside the Holy Roman Catholic Church right now as we speak. Michael, it's Tuesday. It's always good to hear from you, brother. How are you?
Good and
are
you? You too.
Are you in? Are you still on the road in Detroit?
No, I finally made it back home.
Yay! Yay for home. Hey, before we get to Alfie Evans, let me reach over here for just a second. I've got this. One of our kind of irregular parishioners at our little Latin Mass in Abita Springs, who is a member of the Tradition, Faith, and Property Group, TFP, right?
Oh.
He showed up at Sunday's Mass, and he was handing these pamphlets out. And I took one, and I read it with great interest. The American Society for the Defense of Tradition, Family, and Property, of course, our friend John Horvat is one of those men as well. Are LGBT people other Christs? A review of Father James Martin's Building a Bridge is written by Luis Sergio Solimio. Now, I'm not going to get into the meat and taters and the nuts and bolts of this, but the reason that our friend stopped by our parish was to warn us. Father Martin has been asked to give the commencement address at nearby Spring Hill College in Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the greater outrage. Are you ready for this? Father Martin has also been asked to give the commencement address at nearby Loyola University in New Orleans.
There's a shock.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or he is a Jesuit, after all. Now, what the TFP is asking for and what our friend stopped by to ask us to do was to try and make plans to attend, to do a rosary rally outside of both of those events to try to counteract and make reparations for Father Martin leading so many people into mortal sin. That's one. And number two, to begin some sort of a awareness and novena praying campaign now to try and prevail here to stop this madman from having access to the tender young minds that are about to graduate from those two universities, Spring Hill in Alabama and Loyola on St. Charles Avenue in New Orleans. I know you've covered Father Martin a lot. What do you think?
Well, I think that absolutely he should be protested and people should be doing acts of reparation for what he's doing. One of the things that I've always contended with about what Father Martin says is that he goes around and he labels individuals as LGBT persons. In other words, he's equating their sexual proclivities and their sexual fantasies with their person, which is absolutely condemnable. I mean, that's like calling somebody for the rest of their lives a thief because they stole something, or calling somebody for the rest of their lives an alcoholic, even though they've been 40 years sober. You know, if somebody is, we are not the composite of our virtue and our vice. That is not what we are. As individuals, we are if we're baptized, we are children of God who are waiting for the inheritance of the kingdom. And when you identify somebody who has homosexual tendencies or who is engaged in sodomy as a person who is identified specifically with either that sin, that sinful act, or that proclivity, you are thereby reducing their human dignity to a debased act. And that is absolutely condemnable.
Yeah, and in this piece here that was written by Salameo, He does a nice job of summarizing what you just said. I mean, that's how he opens it up, and that this is what's wrong with this. Then he goes on to quote Father Martin from his book Building a Bridge, and he gives some of the things that Father Martin has actually said. One of them is just so scandalous that I don't even know if I want to read it to people and run the risk of tainting minds. But, yeah, he does write this, though, something that St. Augustine of the morals of the Catholic Church has said about what it is that we're talking about here. And here's what St. Augustine said. As practicing Catholics, we are filled with compassion and pray for those who struggle against violent temptation to sin, be it toward homosexual sin or otherwise. We are conscious of the enormous difference between these individuals who struggle with their weakness and strive to overcome them and others who transform their sin into a reason for pride and try to impose their lifestyle on society as a whole in flagrant opposition to traditional Christian morality and natural law. However, we pray for them too. According to the expression attributed to St. Augustine, we hate the sin but love the sinner. And to love the sinner, as the same doctor of the church explains, is to wish for him the best we can possibly desire for ourselves, namely, that he may love God with a perfect affection. And that's the quote from St. Augustine on the morals of the church here. You're not loving someone, and you're not being charitable towards them if you're telling them that you support them in the commission of their mortal sin. If they were killing people, you wouldn't tell them, it's okay, I support you in your killing of other, in your murder. If they were if they were thieves, you wouldn't tell them, I support you in the commission of your acts of thievery. This would not apply for any other mortal sin, but now supposedly we're supposed to accept that it applies for homosexuality, transgenderism, what have you here. Is there another motive going on here that we're not hearing from our prelates and from the pulpit, perhaps?
Well, maybe.
What might that be?
Could it be acceptance of homosexual acts and relationships within the church? Well, you know, actually that is the case, because Father Martin said as much in one of the interviews that he did, or presentations he gave, where there were a whole bunch of homosexuals that were in the audience, and one of them stood up and said that he was engaged to his boyfriend, and said that, you know, he wasn't sure if the church was ready to accept him kissing his quote-unquote husband in the church during the Kiss of Peace in the Novus Ordo rite. And Father Martin said very bluntly that he hopes that at some point the church, it will be perfectly acceptable for him to kiss his husband, he used the word husband, in church during the Kiss of Peace. So Father Martin not only equated the other, the significant other of this individual, as a potential or future husband, which is false, but he also advocated for the acceptance of that relationship in the church during Mass. That's the agenda. That's what's going on here.
Now, this particular instance here where he says, I actually have the quote here. Father Martin favors homosexual kissing during Mass. Listen to this, folks. During a presentation at Villanova University, another outrage, St. Villanova University, on August the 29th, 2017, Father Martin told a practicing homosexual who attended Mass, quote, I hope in 10 years you will be able to kiss your partner in church or, you know, soon to be your husband, close quote. And then the TFP asked the question, how can a Catholic priest promote the public display of sacrilegious and sinful behavior during the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass? This is a double outrage to many people who attend the traditional or the Mass. The Mass as it was before the tinkering began with it, because there is, I mean, the only sign of peace is that the priest kind of turns two-thirds of a term towards the deacon and gives him the pox. And he does tell us the pox. And, of course, we have a response to it. But there's no touching, there's no smacking of lips, there's no high-fiving, there's none of the shenanigans and the outright scandal that's visited upon what's laying upon that altar to be adored and honored. So that, to me, that's a double whammy. If it's even possible to be more outrageous, well, then that's it.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. You start looking at what Father Martin is doing, and you look around at some of the actions and statements of some bishops that have been supportive of him, so, such as Cardinal Supich or Bishop Tobin. After a while, you start to recognize that, or actually, it's Cardinal Tobin now. You start to recognize that these prelates are also pushing the agenda, because quite possibly they are themselves engaging in such behavior. I hate to put it that way, and I hate to be as blunt about it as I am, but there are plenty of accusations regarding the relationships that these individuals have had while they were in seminary and post-seminary, and then you look at the way they've protected pederasts, homosexual priests. I mean, for crying out loud, look at what's going on in Saginaw, Michigan, with the local law enforcement grabbing a whole bunch of files because the local ordinary was engaging in the destruction of evidence with regard to pederast and homosexual priests. The cover-up is usually a sign of personal involvement, which tends to, well, let's just be blunt. It's a sign that we have a huge homosexual problem within the church, specifically in the prelates, and in the clergy. And Father Martin is basically the mouth of Sauron in this instance, where he's just going around advocating for what these people already want.
The mouth of Sauron. Well, it is a tragic continuing saga that seemingly every time you and I get together that we wind up talking about this. Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute is, of course, our regular Tuesday guest here at 844-527-8723. And, of course, you can join our live chat room at mikechurch.com if you have a question or comment. And we are out on the Facebook and Facebook Live now, on the YouTube at YouTube Live, of course, on our app and on our site at crusadechannel.com. And we are tweeting out to Alfie's Army to join us. There are 30 people in our chat room right now that are continuing to hold vigil and pray for, moving on now to our next subject, continuing to hold vigil and to pray to the Blessed Virgin and to our Lord, of course, to free Alfie Evans from this court-ordered execution in the UK. I know you want to talk about it. Let me just tell you that the very latest is that there's a medevac helicopter waiting outside, and I just saw this. Antonio Tajani, President of the European Parliament, says, quote, "It is right to give Alfie another chance in Italy," close quote. So even the kleptocrats at the EU are now saying, all right, England, come on, you got to relent here. So I think the prayers are starting to work, but we need to keep the vigil up. So where do you want to let's talk about this. What an outrage, but totally expected, as we were told back in the 19th century by Orestes Brownson. An entity is either religious or it's irreligious. And if you're irreligious, you don't acknowledge the higher authority, well, sure, you can call for the euthanasia of 13-month-old kids, can't you?
Well, absolutely. He's a 23-month-old kid. But
23.
Yeah, when you look at the whole situation, it really doesn't make sense on a practical level. I keep racking my brain around this whole situation. So just to kind of summarize, you have a hospital which has said that this child is, you know, he's beyond saving. We're just going to withdraw treatment. And so it starts a court battle going back and forth as to whether they're going to continue treatment, not withhold treatment, that kind of thing. All right. So on a purely secular, practical level, without taking any Catholic morality or human dignity into it at all.
Okay.
If we're looking at it purely as a business decision, you have a hospital that is trying to impose its own financial decision on whether it is practical and financially feasible to maintain treatment to this child. Okay. That's one discussion. The other discussion is that after this goes to court several times, all the way up to the Supreme Court in Britain, the judge rules that the hospital has the right to withdraw treatment and transfer to palliative care. At that point, the hospital, in withdrawing the treatment from the child is no longer a patient. So why, at that point, would the hospital put 30 armed police officers to guard his door so his parents can't take him out? Can't take him out of the hospital. Why would they do that? There's no practical reason. There's no financial reason. And now you're allocating other resources to prevent the treatment of this child. So why would they do that? I think that this has to do with something that caused his condition to begin with. And I think that the hospital is deathly afraid that if somebody else were to treat Alfie Evans and investigate the cause of his illness, they would find the cause, and they would find that the hospital is in some way responsible, or at least the medical community in Britain is in some way responsible.
Now, you see, now that's why you're the investigative genius that you are, because you see through this as an investigator, and I didn't even think of that, this is not only about, well, you know, we have this 1891 court precedent, and the British state has assumed the power to intervene on behalf of children if they think a child's life is endangered or the parents are incapacitated, or whatever the case is. Of course, there is the actions of a secular state in making and having the power to make the determination to begin with, which I think is wrong. But then there is the liability. Now, isn't the NHS, though, kind of, aren't they protected because they're a government-created entity? Aren't they protected from liability, from lawsuits like this? So is this just purely to protect them, to save themselves from embarrassment? Or are they legally and financially could be held accountable?
As far as the law is concerned, I don't know. There seems to be some leeway for the parents to be able to sue the hospital when it is apparent that they have not only neglected to treat a child that could have been treated, but in the case such as Alfie Evans, if they do mishandle directly the treatment of the child with the direct result that the child dies from it, they can be sued.
Okay.
That would be the hospital. But and my understanding is that Tom Evans, Alfie's father, is in the process of putting together that particular lawsuit in the event that his son dies there at Alder Hey anyway.
Okay.
On the other hand, even if let's just say that the medical establishment is completely protected from any kind of lawsuit with regard to whatever may have caused his death or caused his illness to begin with, or to cause his prolonged illness if they were misadministering drugs or something like that, even if they were legally protected from lawsuits, they are not protected in the court of public opinion.
Right.
And I think that is ultimately what is going to cause certain problems, because if, in the court of public opinion, Alfie is treated at another hospital and they find some degree of malfeasance, they find that there is a systemic approach to how they want to treat patients or whether they are engaging in certain behaviors that are in a systematic way, basically in alignment with the culture of death in some way. I'm speaking in generalities for a reason. I'm not trying to be too specific. But if that is discovered and that gets written about and it gets put forth into the papers, the people would be outraged. And if the people are outraged, they're going to force their politicians to be outraged. And if their politicians are outraged, they're going to start working on the law, which could in turn remove some of those protections against the medical establishment. And that, I think, is ultimately what they're afraid of.
844-527-8723 is our telephone number. Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute on the Dudemaker Hotline with us, our regular Tuesday visit with Michael. You could sign up for Michael's newsletter and read his website and stay abreast of what it is that the Lepanto Institute is investigating these days at Lepanto, L-E-P-A-N-T-O, LepantoInstitute.org. And, of course, all our podcast and previous discussions are available at CrusadeChannel.com in the podcast category and on my site at MikeChurch.com. Here's the latest. It's 10:15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll read this to you about young Alfie Evans. Here you go. UK doctors from the Medical Ethics Alliance have expressed their horror over Alder Hayes' medical tyranny. They demand Alfie be sent to Rome and say the hospital has brought themselves into disrepute. We are deeply concerned and outraged by the treatment and care afforded to Alfie Evans, wanting to withdraw treatment so that he will die. The medical authorities have taken Alfie to the high court, the five doctors state in a press release. Medical tyranny must stop. Poor Alfie must not be killed in this way. We demand that the authorities allow Alfie safe passage to Rome, they add. The doctors demand that the GMC investigate the actions of doctors providing Alfie's care. So there you go, kind of like what you were saying there. The doctors here are going, okay, this is just an outrage. Something else is going on here. We don't know what you clowns are covering up, but it's obvious that there's another motive here. So I think what you were saying earlier is at least ringing true with some of the doctors that are talking about this and are writing about this. But there is, again, and I don't want to poo-poo this, but there is also, now let's just pretend for a moment that there is nothing to see here for no malpractice or anything like this. John O'Sullivan, who is a former editor of the National Review Online, kind of tries to split his hair in an editorial that he wrote in the National Review Online this morning, basically saying that, well, you know, we don't really have a problem with the 1891 British courts determining that the courts could intervene and could basically take possession of a child if the parents become incapacitated and then could administer the care, as has happened in cases where blood transfusions have been refused or whatever the case is, Michael. But I read that as no. I do, and you ought to have a problem with that. Case law and court law ought to always, if it ever crosses the path, God's law, it ought to yield. The fourth commandment is pretty clear about whose responsibility this child is. In the exception, you know, we always try to say here when you and I talk and whenever I talk about these dogmas or doctrines, look, you write a doctrine to be the law. You don't write the exception to be the law. If you write the exception to be the law, then you're writing basically human frailty or human fallibility into the law. So you acknowledge that there can be exceptions, but you can't make law out of them. And that sounds to me like what O'Sullivan is equivocating for here.
Well, you know, Mike, your first problem is that you're actually thinking that this has anything to do with law at all. call us crazy, but, you know, obviously law doesn't have a place in this, and I'll tell you why. There is no law which is let's step back. What is the purpose of a police force but to enforce
the law?
Right?
Correct.
So here you have a situation where there is a hospital which has a patient, and that patient is on life support, and the hospital is trying desperately to withdraw the life support from the patient. At the point that the hospital withdraws its treatment of a patient, that patient is no longer their patient, right?
Right.
Okay. So my question is, what law is the hospital and the court system able to point to, which allows for law enforcement officers to bar the door to prevent the individual, the non-patient, from leaving. Even the judge said that Alfie Evans isn't imprisoned. He's not a prisoner in the hospital. Those are his words.
Right, right.
But I don't know how else to define this. This is imprisonment.
So he's no longer, if he's not a patient and they won't let him leave, and they got 30 bobbies standing outside with nightsticks, whatever it is that they have, then he is a POW.